From the Latin de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 14th day of January 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. Krista Swanson with the Farm Doc Daily team will discuss the interest rates and refinancing and what that might mean for your farm. And we'll close out our time together by taking up the weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm in Chicago on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today in Chicago at $5.34 and a quarter a bushel, up 9 3/4. The May contract at $5.37 3/4, a dime higher. And December futures at $4.57 3/4, up 4 1/2 cents. March soybeans at $14.30 and a half, up 24 1/4. The May at $14.27 3/4, 24 higher. And November beans, $11.96 and a half a bushel. They finished 20 1/2 cents higher for the day. Bean meal futures at $4.64.90, up 7.80, and the bean oil at $43.11, 93 cents higher on the afternoon. Soft red winter wheat settled at $6.70 a bushel. The lead option March at 9 1/2 cents higher, and the hard red at $6.36 and a half, 10 3/4 of a cent higher for the afternoon. A quick look at the meat sector. Live cattle futures finished the nearby contract down 17 1/2 cents at $112.07 1/2 cents. That's the February. The feeders at $132.60 were 97 1/2 cents lower on the afternoon, and lean hogs per 100 pounds in the February contract at $66.30 finished down 55 cents. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can always find and listen to our programming anytime you'd like. We're at willag.org. That's willag.org. Matt Bennett at agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago. Another big day there with soybean futures leading the way, wheat higher as well as corn. What drove the marketplace?
Well, you know, this market basically was kind of dead early in the day. You know, and then you come in here and there's a lot of chatter, a lot of talk about Chinese poking around about, you know, new crop soybeans and wanting to you know, try to book some more cargoes, a new crop. And I think it got the market excited early in the day. You saw front month bean futures up maybe a nickel, 4 or 5 cents, whereas the NOVA was running 11 to 12 higher. You close the day, though, with, you know, March 23 3/4, 24, somewhere right in there. We haven't quite settled yet whenever I'm talking to you. But, you know, basically we're up another 2 to 3 cents, you know, from what new crop was. So, very interesting spread action as we went throughout the day. But what got things started, in my opinion, was pretty darn good export sales for both corn and beans, first of all. And then second of all, that chatter that we're hearing about new crop bean prices.
Yeah, so spread action, you talked about spread action in just the soybean contracts, but I'm wondering about Dease corn November beans or the new crop there, and what you see between the two of those.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a great point. I mean, first of all, before we get to that, you know, front month corn futures, of course, 9 3/4, 10 cents right in there, whereas new crop corn is only up 4 to 5. Regardless, we'll take anything we can get, you know, because you've got these corn trading out back close to 460. That's just a pretty impressive place to be. But I think the more important story, you know, that you're kind of getting at, that makes a heck of a lot of sense for people to listen to, is that we're at 2.62 to 1, you know, on November bean to these corn prices. It's pretty interesting to see that kind of ratio. We do know the U.S. grower likes to grow corn, but I was also on a presentation this week with an agronomist out of Iowa who shared with me that bean sales in Iowa look like they're going to be an all-time record as far as what seed people are going to plant. We know the derecho event's certainly going to have an impact on that due to all the down corn, but there's a ton of interest in planting soybeans in the state of Iowa this year. Now, given the kind of profit margins we saw on soybeans the last several years here at the state of Illinois, I think bean acreage will be rather robust as well. So I think the thing that we all need to remember is that there's going to be an acreage battle this year. You've got wheat prices, July wheat out to next summer is trading over 650. You know, I think we settle around 655 today. Cotton in the South is running at $80. That's pretty darn good price for cotton. So I think some of your smaller crops, you know, on some of your fringe acres are going to do everything they can to latch on to the acres they can. And there's no doubt whatsoever that new crop bean price is doing everything they can to buy as many acres as what they can.
Do prices have to do more in order to pull off the acreage battle? Meaning, are we at a place now where the acreage might come into play and we don't have to really rally that much more or not?
That's a great question. You know, typically, the market's going to go farther than what it really needs to. And so we got to keep that in the back of our head. You know, the other thing that we have to understand is that our stocks use ratio on old crops, 3.1% on soybeans. I mean, that's at this time of year, the tightest we've ever seen. I mean, there for several years in a row, we were getting down to bottom of the barrel, but that was always late in the marketing year. And so not only did you see good sales today as far as exports were concerned, but we had a surprise announcement again there yesterday. And so, we're at very high soybean prices on your old crop and new crop, but old crop, you know, well over $14 in here. And we're still selling beans. And so I think what the market's looking at is, you know, what happens if the second crop, you know, out of Brazil isn't all that great? You know, what happens if Argentina getting a little bit of rainfall isn't enough to really stem the tide and they still end up with, you know, a little bit off as far as soybean and corn production goes for this year? Because if that happens, then the pressure is going to be on the U.S. to have, you know, not only big acreage, but big yields. You're going to need to see big production out of the U.S. This upcoming year. And if you don't see it, the market is going to react violently.
And that'll happen when?
Well, that's the thing is, I don't, it depends on which weather issue you're talking about. But, you know, I've got to think that, you're going to get, it sure looks like you're going to get really nice spring insurance prices for both corn and beans. There's probably going to be a little bit of bidding going on in the month of February. So, you know, are we going to see better prices than 457 and 1197? I don't know. I really don't. But it wouldn't surprise me just due to the fact that it seems like the bullish sentiment is sky high at the present time. I have to keep an eye on South American weather. But if we're going to get these markets just into crazy mode, if you will, I mean, obviously, we've already rallied through the roof. But if we're really going to get carried away, it would have to be on summer weather for the U.S., in my opinion, you know, unless the Supreme crop ends up being a major dud out of South America. If that happens, in all honesty, I think this corn market could go another dollar higher pretty handily if the Safrina crop has some sort of a failure. And then, of course, the pressure is going to be on the U.S. once again, even more so, you know, if we don't end up taking a monster crop out of Brazil.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. Krista Swanson is here. She and the crew at the Farm Doc team have penned an article that is now on the website called Cost Management, Interest Rates, and Refinancing. Thank you, Krista, for being here. Why did you decide to take a look at this area?
Well, last summer, we actually looked at various cost management strategies in a series of articles. And in those articles, we looked at cost management related to fertility, tillage, and harvest equipment. And just given this time we're in and the fact that we have this historically low interest rates, we decided to take a look at cost management from a different approach and look at cost savings that could be associated with these low interest rates that we're seeing right now and refinancing, kind of a different approach to cost management than some of the things that we normally talk about.
How big a percentage, by the way, is interest of the expense on the farms in the FBFM records? And there are about 1,500 grain farms, I think. And I don't know which farm set you looked at exactly.
Yep, and that's the set I looked at. Just those grain farms enrolled in the Illinois Farm Business Farm Management Association program. And interest costs, they vary in a really wide range from farm to farm. So, you know, some farms do have no interest costs, and we were looking at 2019, just the 1-year view. And some had as high as over 60% of their total operating costs were in interest expenses. So just a huge range. I will say, though, that interest to costs only accounted for more than 10% of the total operating costs on about 20% of grain farms. More than 45% have an interest cost over 5%. So what that is telling us is that interest expense is not a large share of operating costs for most farms. But on some farms, it is a major expense. And regardless, carefully managing debt and interest costs can be valuable regardless of where a farm falls on that spectrum.
Okay, so now let's lay the landscape. Over the decades, what have interest rates done? And I suppose we probably should start in the crisis here, that late 1970s, early 1980s.
Yeah, so in the late 1970s, we had interest rates for agricultural loans, operating loans, and farm real estate loans were hitting around that 18% to 19% mark. And that's where the peak was. And really, since then, we've seen this downward slide in interest rates. And actually, the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank, they have a data set for quarterly agricultural interest rates going all the way back to the fourth quarter of 1969. And since then, the third quarter of 2020, which is the most recent posted as of now, is the lowest in that entire period. So we are definitely at historically low interest rates right now.
And your suggestion is that producers, I think this is the suggestion in the article, that producers need to manage the interest rate as an expense.
Exactly. And I mean, and this is, you know, if it makes sense for your farm. So depending on, you know, thinking specifically about term debt that a farm might have, you know, we're talking about land purchases, long-term loans. For someone who maybe had a 30-year loan on a land purchase from 2010, you know, they're only 10 years into the term of that. Going back a little further, let's say 2000 and maybe a loan originated in 2005, because we kind of had a little peak in interest rates around that time. So, you know, they're halfway through that 30-year term. They still have another 15 years to go, and interest rates are considerably lower now than in 2005. And so this could be an opportunity to refinance, maybe extend that term, or maybe keep it at 15 years, depending on the situation. Again, this is very situational, farm to farm, but it's definitely something to look into and work with your lender on what your options are. And if you can take advantage of taking some old debt and, you know, refinancing it at the rates that we have today.
Do you have examples?
Yes. So in the article that Todd referred to initially, we provide some examples. We provide one specific example on a loan refinance. And in that example, we look at the per acre amount borrowed, and we look at just the difference between the interest rate in 2018 versus an interest rate in 2020. And even though that is actually only about, in the example, we only decreased interest rates by 125 basis points. We went from 5.5% to 4.25%. But even in that example, it still provided cost savings to the farmer. And I will note that we kind of included an approximate fee estimate, because there would be a fee associated with refinancing. Some lenders may also have a fee for early prepayment. So again, something to talk with the lender about. But and then also we considered the present value of that cost savings, which is an important thing, because the net present value of the interest savings is going to be different than those values over time. But still, it provided, you know, some interest savings that can help manage budgets today or over the next few years by doing the refinance.
Yeah, and the result was that there was, over the life of the term of the mortgage, there was a $600 per acre savings on the life of that loan.
That's right.
Anything else?
Again, I encourage people to farmers and you know, even non-farmers that might have homes, this is a good time to work with a lender and try to figure out a way to take advantage of the interest rates that we have. I would also note another thing kind of briefly talked about in the article was on new purchases, there's also options for taking advantage of low interest rates now and some different there's programs through the United States Department of Agriculture, the Farm Service Agency. They offer different loans that generally have lower interest rates and more favorable terms than alternative options. And those are generally lower than in other lenders, but right now they're even lower because of the environment we're in. So if you qualify for those types of programs, that's something to look into. And there's also some non-traditional lending methods, such as through input suppliers or equipment dealers that often offer really low interest rate or interest-free financing for a period of time. The catch with some of those is that often, kind of similar to how a credit card works, once you've hit that period of time, interest rates may jump to a higher level. So something that takes responsible management, but can provide valuable cost savings.
Krista, thank you so much.
Yep, thank you for having me on.
That's Krista Swanson. She's a member of the PharmDoc team here at the University of Illinois and the lead on an article titled Cost Management, Interest Rates, and Refinancing. You can find it on the PharmDoc Daily website right now. On this Thursday, let's check out the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Hope you're having a good day there. It's been a good one here.
Yeah, for sure. Looking forward to a little bit of colder weather. I'm kind of tired of this boring winter, but that's probably just me. But as a guy who likes the weather, I'd rather see some snows around here and some more interesting stuff than the way it's been.
Maybe we'll get to that here in a bit, but I do want to start in the warmer climes in South America. Can you tell me about rainfall for Brazil during this growing season?
Well, Brazil is going to see some decent rains over the next 3 to 4 days, and that's going to include some of the key states of Mato Grosso and into Paraná. The thing that needs to be kept in mind, though, is that we need a lot of rain. We don't just need 3 or 4 days of rain. We basically need it to rain every single day for the next 10, 20, or 30 days. And that's pretty much the only way we're going to make up some of these rainfall deficits that exist. Now, that's not going to happen because once we get into next week, things will start to dry out in some of these areas. So we'll see some good rains coming up, and then it'll dry out, and that'll leave kind of a mixed bag of conditions. The big concern that we have, and this is one that everybody probably will need to think about over time, and we'll see how it all works out over the next few months, is that in some of these key states, it's been unusually dry. If you look at Mato Grosso, October was the third driest over the last 41 years. And that was followed by the number one driest on record in November, and then the number three driest in 41 years in December. And that's the key soybean state of Brazil. It's now raining a little bit here and there, but harvest will begin in earnest over the next 2 to 4 weeks. So we'll see how all this works out, but we would argue that even though, yes, it has been raining, it probably hasn't been raining quite enough for them to totally avoid a problem. The story's a little bit different in some other areas. In Paraná, it's really not been that bad of a growing season. Yes, it started out pretty dry, but it started raining in the middle of November, and it's been raining on and off here and there, and it's going to continue to rain as we move forward. But Paraná only represents about 15 to 20% of soybeans. Once you get outside of that area, things don't look quite as nice. So we'll have to wait and see how all this works out, and that'll come to fruition over the next few months as yield reports come available.
What do we know about Argentina and the weather there?
Well, Argentina was having a pretty significant problem a couple of weeks ago, and that's because it had been very dry over the last 2 weeks, the last 4 weeks, even the last 60 and 90 days, and that was indicative of drought. It has rained since then. We saw an unexpected rain last week. It's rained a little bit this week. We have another rain coming up over the course of Friday and Saturday, so just tomorrow and into the weekend. That's eased the dryness concern enough that we have time now for new rains to show up. Now, it is going to be dry for the next 10 days once we get beyond Saturday, and so we'll need to see more rains coming up. That being said, it will be cool over the next 3 to 4, even 5 days, and so that will also keep things at bay as far as any concerns over dryness. Once we get into the middle of next week, though, a short-duration heat wave is going to begin. We'll see highs well into the 90s and 100s in the key corn and soybean areas of Argentina. It starts on Tuesday and Wednesday next week, and then lasts for anywhere from 5 to 7 days before some type of system or cool front should return some thunderstorms to the region at the end of the month. If all that happens, that will then push us into February before we'd have to be overly concerned about anything in Argentina. But if that doesn't happen, then we become concerned about Argentina a little bit sooner than that. So that's still a fluid situation as well, but it has improved a lot over the last week or two.
As we started our conversation, you mentioned you'd like to see a little snow, maybe even some colder weather. Sounds like there could be both in the offing across a good portion of the northern parts of the Corn Belt. Can you tell me about what the changes look like?
Well, a strong cool front is moving through the central U.S. now, and really it's an Arctic cold front, so it's a pretty big deal. That's going to blast through today, and then another front comes through over the course of the next couple of days as well. And so that will turn temperatures a lot colder. That will also produce a blizzard in parts of Iowa and Minnesota from tonight through tomorrow. Though the biggest problem with that storm is not so much heavy snowfall, but it's high winds. And because of that, there will be a disruption to logistics across parts of each of those states. But further to the east in much of the Corn Belt, only some snow showers here and there starting up tonight and tomorrow, and then continuing into Saturday. The other more interesting feature, though, is that once this colder pattern sets up over the next few days, that allows a jet stream to set up closer to the central U.S. And what that will eventually do is allow new systems to develop next week and then maybe even into the following week. So we think the weather pattern will turn a lot stormier over the next 7 to 10 days than the way it's been, and it will also be a lot colder. Now, keep in mind, we've been so mild ever since we started November that even slightly being below normal might feel really cold, but average high temperatures at this time of the year are only in the 20s and 30s across the Corn Belt, with a lot of areas like the Chicago area staying below freezing all day long. But that has not been the case at all at any point in this winter. So what's going to happen now is a little more normal as opposed to abnormal.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep, sounds great. Let's chat next week.
We will indeed. That's Mike Tenora with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. He joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.